We have 10 minutes set aside now for some quick Q&As, panel discussion. We might send to 15 because we can break into your comfort if we need to. I'd like just to start off. I mean, interesting, we've had these international perspectives, and Adele raised some interesting questions about the global, the formal global discussion of bioethics and the work of... I mean, let me just, as a show of hands, this is a highly intelligent, you know, sample of London-informed society here. Let me ask you, how many of you... you know, have heard of the International Bioethics Committee at UNESCO, and I think we could talk about it for a couple of sentences, reasonably intelligently. Be honest, come on, I'm not going to, not taking a photograph. Okay, thank you very much. That's about a 15-20%. How many of you know what COMEST is? COMEST, COMEST. Okay, this is a simple yes or no question. We have half a hand here. Matt is, yes, I trust you know what COMEST is. COMEST is the French acronym for the World Commission, the World Committee on the Ethics of Scientific and Technological Knowledge, which operates on the other side of the corridor from the International Bioethics Committee in UNESCO. So I'm just interested, and I'm going to be there next week, and I'll say, I'm this highly informed London audience, and one person to half heard of you. So, Adele, quickly, I mean, why is it, here we are, you know, all of, you know, 2 or 3 hours from Paris, and people don't know what's going on in the global discussion?
Well, to be honest, in terms of the UK situation, I'm not that au fait with it because my research was done in Kenya and South Africa.
How do they compare with this law?
Less. Well, certainly, that was back in 2005, 2006, though. And I know Kenya has been doing an awful lot of work since to increase the profile of bioethics in Kenya through the UNESCO National Commission there. So I'm hoping to do some follow-up fieldwork soon to see how the situation has changed. But certainly... I spoke to people who are Wellcome Trust funded British scientists out in Kilifi in Kenya, mm-hmm. and he said, well, geneticist said, well, have UNESCO published the declaration in Science or Nature? Because that's the journal I read. They haven't thought to go on the website.
Thank you. I mean, Brenda Armand, what would you make of this lack of interest in the UNESCO effort?
Well, it might apply to other things that UNESCO does as well, you know. But I know quite a lot of people in other European countries, and they've all got bioethics committees, and they all know what the others are doing. The Scandinavians know what the Dutch are doing, and they're friends with the people in Germany and so on. So it's not the case that those people are just shut in their own box in this country, for example, though perhaps actually our country is less outgoing than the other Europeans. But there are the same arguments going on. Everybody's publishing in the same journals, and they have the same conferences. I'm going to one in Lugano in a week or a few weeks' time, on the future of medicine, as it happens. And it will be a mixed group, Germans, Scandinavians, Dutch, and they'll be speaking, it's Italian speaking there, but mostly it'll be in German or English, and there's French speakers. So I don't have this pessimistic view that because an organisation like UNESCO hasn't got much wide
the conversations are taking place
The European community as a whole.
Now, I have a yes or no question for Aaron. Did anyone use the term UNESCO when you were in the job?
No, never.
That's never. Simple question. That's a very simple question. And we won't ask whether that's a genetic issue or whatever it is. Well, we have case. Okay, so quick questions from the floor. We have a slightly longer panel discussion at the end, but now, Helen. Introduce yourself, please.
Two questions, is that all right?
Well, one question, and introduce yourself briefly first.
I'm Helen Morris from Dream Watch UK. Okay, I'll just ask Aaron a question then. Had you looked at a comparison with what happened to the Pima Indians in the United States, where a very similar thing happened in the sense that the US were looking for diabetes genes in that population, mm-hmm. and a lot of people adopted the view then that it was a genetic disease and that therefore there was nothing that
I've looked at a lot of cross-cultural literature. I haven't found that one actually.
You've learned something
pass
already.
It along. You know, I'm still developing these ideas. But no, it's quite interesting. The point is that when new systems of knowledge are introduced anywhere in any society and disseminated to the public, cultural legacy matters, history matters, and semantics matter. They matter specifically because they produce, they elicit a social response. And I think oftentimes policymakers and biomedical researchers and health professionals forget that the semantics truly matter. Not just cross-culturally, but
this is an important lesson that you, I think, left with us. Yes, please. Introduce yourself briefly and then question.
Yeah, my name's Richard Tussin from Manchester University. And my question is also for Aaron, and it kind of picks up on what you just said, actually, about the cultural response to semantics, because the concept of personalized medicine is one which travels across a number of different national, cultural, and institutional contexts and has different meanings associated with it in those contexts. So I was interested in hearing more about the extent to which personalized medicine circulates as a concept within the Gulf states that you did your research in, and what it might mean for individuals there, either genetic professionals or patients.
The politics in the region on a microcosmic scale and a macrocosmic scale are very complex. Health professionals in the region are all from a Western medical background. I have yet to meet an Emirati-trained doctor who wasn't trained in the US or Britain and had probably lived here for 10 years. And it's very rare to find an Emirati-trained doctor, period. Almost all of them are British, German, or Swedish. And they become incredibly frustrated because it's sort of what you were, your point about people getting appointed to positions in UNESCO seems quite haphazard. The policymakers and the people in charge of hospitals are real estate projects. They aren't produced for with well-being in mind. They're produced for making money. It's very difficult. The people in charge are sheikh's cousins and brothers and best friends and their uncles. This is a very cynical view, but the clash, it's very tough to try and educate and present information the way you want to. I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but it's a lot to say in one.
Whether the concept of personalized medicine is one that currently circulates within the Gulf states, that you've done your research in, and if it does, what does it mean in that context? Does it have the same meaning that it might have?
Probably not the same in the U.S. One of my points is that consanguineous marriages are increasing because one health issue, the idea of a health issue for Arab doesn't go to the individual. For a lot of people, it is defined by the group. It seems counterintuitive, but the fact that there is such a concept as Arab genetics, regardless of the fact that it seems that it promotes disease, is enough to say, well, we actually have to marry our cousins because this is something we own. This is a part of us, and we need to continue keeping things in the family or keeping things between Arabs. Because this is who we are.
So that's our second take. Genes are genes, and marry your cousin. Okay. One more question, and we will. Aaron's had enough questions. Any questions to our other panelists before we break for a cup of tea? Now's your opportunity. You can get your second one, but it's not to Aaron.
Yeah, no, it's not to Aaron. Okay. It's to Adele. I want to ask about your idea of getting rid of the consensus requirement, because I've got a specific example from 2003, where in fact the UK watered down the wording about retention of DNA that had been collected by the police. Where the original wording said that should be destroyed if somebody was innocent, but it was watered down to say except in accordance with national law, because of course the UK had changed its own law to allow that retention. And I wondered whether you think your idea could deal with those kind of issues of power. Obviously you've got one government that's lobbying strongly for something, which incidentally is now expanding internationally, so UAE interestingly, is the country where the UK Forensic Science Service now has the contract to put the entire population on the DNA database, which was part of the lobbying that was going on at the time. I mean, can an instrument like the UNESCO instrument actually deal with those kind of politics and commercial interests? if you get rid of a consensus requirement.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting example, because some of the coverage of the UK DNA database will say that actually the system at the moment is in contravention of the International Declaration.
Yes, so
despite the UK having brought in that watered down.
Well, it was found to be in contravention of the European Convention on Human Rights, so it's now unlawful and the laws being rewritten.
Yeah.
But the UNESCO guidelines have been changed, so it's not strictly contravening those guidelines.
No. I think with the cloning example, so this report from 2009, I spoke to a member of the working group who was very keen on producing this 2011 statement. And because there was such disagreement about it at the IBC meeting, the chair said, well, we always operate by consensus. We're not going to have an exception this time, so we're just going to have to drop it. And now this person's view was that if they'd been able to vote silently, then perhaps it would only have been a few countries that would have objected, one of them being the US, and that perhaps that there was more consensus than thought, but it wasn't coming through because those with the most powerful voices were the ones doing the talking. And so that's another example of those power differentials, that perhaps if you drop that consensus requirement, more things might be able to be done. But then you lose the power of being able to say we've decided on this by consensus and it's agreed by an intergovernmental body. So there are pros and cons, I think.
And Armin, you have a final comment.
I just wanted to add, you know, we must remember that there are EU bodies which actually must have a lot more clout, at least within Europe. And, of course, there's also the World Health Organization. So I think that, as somebody said, UNESCO is more concerned with education and perhaps not so much with changing public policy. Their influence really is supposed to lie there.
Yeah, because I suppose the point of it is it is the only global organisation addressing many of these questions.
Well, what about the World Health Organisation?
Well, but the point is that the broader questions in terms of medicine and science and so on and so forth, commerce, IBC, I mean, it's a comprehensive discussion
rather
than one simply within the profession. But to come back to the problem, I mean, basically the Security Council is the only bit of the UN that can enforce things. And then it can still be vetoed by one of the permanent members. I mean, it's all ultimately by consensus. And what interested me in the process behind the declaration was, and for those who don't mind sitting in this stuff, just tune out, was the two Category 2 meetings, which were called precisely because there was a huge fight going on politically about the Universal Declaration to try to resolve, and in fact did finally resolve the question, broke the logjam, and you ended up with a declaration, which you weren't going to get 6 months beforehand. Because there was an attempt to bang heads together using these meetings, which involved any nation who wants to go, to try to ratchet up the level of consensus. But I think this is because these are global questions, it seems to me this is exactly the conversation we're going to have much more. 15 minutes, I believe we have tea, we have the food around the corner, this is the door here, and we will reconvene at 20 past. Thank you very much, and thank you to our panelists.